You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, August 21st, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, citizen journalist Mariah Stewart, based in Ferguson, who is covering Ferguson through funding of the Beacon Reader, on what it's like to live and cover Ferguson when you're from Ferguson. Also on the program today, more airstrikes against ISIS. And in Texas, a new open carry gun organization, the Huey P. Newton Gun Club. And many of those lawmakers taking the ice bucket challenge also voted to cut funding for ALS in the sequester deal. Meanwhile, two American Ebola patients, or I should say at least one, will be released or has been released from the hospital. Unclear as to whether or not it is a function of the experimental drug treatments he received. Macy's settles a suit for racial profiling. And a Republican councilman blames his posting of racist pictures of President Obama on the fact that he was heavily involved with the Republican Party.
Most honest, most genuine explanation ever.
Indeed. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Just a word before we go to Mariah Stewart. The Huffington Post and the Beacon Reader. Apparently, the Beacon Reader is a means in which you can crowdfund specific citizen journalists who report locally across the country. They have partnered with the Huffington Post to crowdfund to raise $40,000 to hire and train Mariah Stewart. She will work with one of the Huffington Post reporters, Ryan Riley, who has been on the ground there, to continue the reporting from Ferguson long after the national media has gone. And we will get to her in a moment, but obviously, you know, citizen journalism is not terribly dissimilar from what we do here. In many respects. So it was interesting also to get a voice from Ferguson that lives in Ferguson or in the area. And just a reminder, you can support this program by becoming a member. It is we are almost exclusively funded by our memberships, and it allows us to do this show, both the free part and the one, the bonus show that we give to members every day. You can become a member today at majority.fm. And don't forget, if you buy crap from Amazon, you can buy it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com and also justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Mariah Stewart. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. On the phone, Mariah Stewart. She is a Ferguson-based journalist who is a citizen journalist being funded by the Beacon Reader and basically crowdsourcing. She is also the recipient of the Ferguson Fellowship, which is a partnership between the Huffington Post and the Beacon Reader. They're attempting to raise $40,000 to fund Mariah's work and her training. And we have a link at majority.fm so that you can contribute to that effort. Mariah, thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure.
Now, Mariah, just give us a sense. Now, you are, do you live in Ferguson or in the area?
I live in the area. I stay in Florissant, which is 10 minutes or less from Ferguson.
And so give us a sense. I mean, I want to talk about what you've seen over the past couple of weeks and what you've been reporting on. But give us a sense of what this area and what was happening in Ferguson a month ago, or really over the past, you know, the couple of years that you've been following this, or really prior to Michael Brown shooting?
Well, prior to the Michael Brown shooting, this area was a normal neighborhood. It's diverse. It's nice. Now, on the police end, however, there has been some issues. I've heard from witnesses, but just this community in general has been pretty quiet.
And but give us a sense of what daily life there is. I mean, I know that Ferguson itself is the I mean, I've seen reports of there have been there's something like three warrants issued per household per year in Ferguson. I mean, give us a sense of what people have been telling you their experience with the police has been.
Basically, they just feel there's an unfair, unjust policy when it comes to them. They feel like they have been racially profiled because of their skin, most of them. The relationship just hasn't been good. I originally came from St. Charles County, which is the suburbs of St. Louis, and I had never experienced a problem with the law, never heard any complaints. It wasn't until I moved here that I realized the atmosphere is a bit different. There's a little bit more hostility toward the police because of the unfairness, getting pulled over just because of their skin color is what a lot of witnesses have been telling me.
And I mean, can you give us a sense of what those encounters are like? I mean, is it people are just walking down the street and they're pulled over? I mean, what? I mean, give us a sense of exactly what you've heard.
Well, there's a joke that goes around the black culture, and it's called getting a DWB. And it stands for driving while black. A lot of young black men that I have met in Ferguson during the protest, they said they have been pulled over for numerous amounts, just because they were doing the speed limit. They didn't have any warrants out, but they were pulled over. Several instances of this has occurred. I don't understand it, but I know it has been here.
And when did you start covering the protests?
I started covering last Monday, which was the day after the burning of the Quick Trip. I had come to the Quick Trip because I knew it was burned down, and I just wanted to take photos. I wanted to see it. I wanted to see what was going on there. So that's when I initially started covering. It wasn't until the next day, Tuesday, that I got picked up with Beacon and started working with them.
And so tell us, obviously you can't go day by day, but tell us what you saw at the beginning of the protests and how those protests developed over the course of the past, I guess, 10 days or so.
What I seen was a community uniting. Overall, I never really looked at St. Louis as this St. Louis, the culture.
Right there. Okay, I'm sorry. We lost you there for a minute. Are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead. Start over for us on that.
All right. So basically, the Ferguson protests, what I seen from the beginning was the community just immediately uniting with one another, holding hands, going up, talking to each other randomly, sharing their experience. As the days went on, and even from the beginning, I've seen a lot of hostility, especially in the younger young people that were out there in Ferguson. You could just see it in their eyes. You could see it, you could hear it in their voices. They're rattled and they were angry. You see the older ones, you see them connect and bond, but you see the younger ones, they definitely had a lot of anger in them.
What do you think accounts for that, the difference between the generations? I mean, presumably the older folks have been living there with under the same conditions. I mean, what do you think accounts for that?
I think the older generation is more beaten or wore out, tired. This isn't their first go round with this experience. And so they're kind of just taking a more peaceful, laid-back approach to it. They're still on the front lines. They're still there, but they have seen more. Whereas the younger people, they're angry, misguided, and there's a big difference, and you can see it. I think that's the main reason why there's such a difference when it comes to daytime protesting versus nighttime. In the daytime, you get a lot of the older community, a lot of the kids, they're marching down the street, just calm, really positive. And at night, you get that rowdy crowd who, more or less, I don't even know if you can call them protesters because they're treating it like it's a big party.
Interesting. And give us a sense of what you've heard. I mean, we've heard all sorts of different reports, ranging from whether or not there were Molotov cocktails being thrown. We've heard reports of police going into churches and taking materials that people had prepared for the protests. Seen reports of Maalox that was purchased and stored at churches as a way of dealing with tear gas. I mean, what can you tell us about any of those reports? I mean, I'm trying to get a sense of what we hear outside of Ferguson and what you have seen that may or may not confirm those reports.
I can say I haven't personally seen the police raid. I have heard stories of those two. I haven't seen Molotov cocktails thrown back. What I can confirm is I've seen protesters throw, and this is numerous amount of times during my stint there, they have thrown the gas cannons back toward the police front lines. That's the number one thing I can say I have seen. I have not seen the Molotov cocktails. I have not seen the police raid. I did hear about that police raid from people, though.
And it appears that things are beginning to calm down, at least at night. I mean, give us a sense. I mean, is there any less protesting and organizing going on during the day? I mean, give us a sense of what was happening during the day yesterday. What's happening today?
Well, there's always marching. There's certainly a larger crowd. There's a larger crowd at night, but there's also a large crowd in the daytime. I think it's just more so people have to work, but you'll see more marches in the daytime. You'll see more unity. You'll see less of the people jumping on their cars, riding on top of the cars, blasting curse music, drinking. You'll see more of that at nighttime, less of it in the day. You won't even see it in the day at all. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought here.
Well, I guess what I'm asking is, you know, what is happening, during the day? I mean, are people organizing in some fashion, and for what aims? I mean, are people starting to talk about recall elections? Are they? What other forms of organizing taking place?
Well, there's usually always something being held at a church. There have been three churches that have been really apparent in this situation, Greater Grace Church, St. Mark's Church, Friendly Temple. Those are just a few I can name off the top of my head that have been holding something. There's also been several churches that have stepped up to hold like educational services for free for the students who have not been going to school in the Ferguson-Florissant School District. During the day, there are lots of organizations, and then all you have to do is go on West Florissant. Around that quick trip, you will always see a group of protesters out there. I think as far as last night goes, when it rains, we had a pretty big storm come through. That knocked off a lot of the protesters, but I'm sure if it doesn't rain tonight, there'll be twice as many.
Are kids out of school? I mean, have the school's been shut down this entire time? Do they continue to be shut down?
Oh, yes. Yes. I believe they were actually supposed to start school last week on that Wednesday, but ever since then, it's been canceled. I actually have a daughter and nephew who go to the Hazelwood School District. It's the neighboring school district of the Ferguson-Florissant School. And they got a call from the superintendent of the district that said, hey, we know what our neighbors are going through. If you need counseling, someone to talk to, here's a hotline. We understand, you know, our kids have questions. We're offering counseling for them as well. That surprised me that a school district that could understand the situation, because normally it's kind of a hush-hush thing. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was pretty cool of Hazelwood School District to do. Like I said, Ferguson has been out of school this whole time, and churches are offering assistance.
Well, what is it? I mean, do you have a sense of what the Ferguson school districts are like? I mean, can you give us any details on the quality of the schools there, or any issues with the schooling?
I cannot give you beforehand. I know a colleague of mine has been researching this Ferguson-Florissant school district. I really can't say much about it. I know it's pretty diverse, whereas some schools are going to be a little bit worse than others. you know, versus other school districts, they're probably good all around, because Ferguson is in that, there's so many little municipalities that sit around Ferguson, like right up the street where protests still go on. That's considered the city of Dalewood. And so it really, it's a wide range with the school district and how those schools are.
And one other question that we've been talking about here is this practice of the police to not wear their badges or their name tags. I don't know if they're doing that during the day right now or if it's simply at night. I mean, what do you know any more details on this?
I did talk to a policeman. We asked him why he didn't have his badge on. He said because he had been instructed strictly not to talk to media and for us not to identify them just in case, you know, we do get a little blurb out of them. They said it's for their safety and so that they don't really get blasted on the media.
And what else did those that police officer you spoke to had to say? Anything else that gives some insight into what the mentality of the police is at this point?
It varies. Just like with the protesters, how there are peaceful ones and there are non-peaceful ones, it varies with the police officers as well. I know the first night of curfew when I was in the media pen, I actually had trouble getting into the media staging area because I did not have an up-to-date press pass. So I was able to talk with that policeman who told me why he wasn't wearing a badge. And, you know, he was nice enough to let me in. And he was joking around, had a really positive attitude. And so did the other officers that were inside the media tent. But I know just two nights ago, us journalists had a bad relationship with the cops for the most part. They were telling us to go back to the media staging area. We didn't quite know where they wanted us to go because there was protesters that weren't so peaceful in that area too. So it's kind of been a struggle for the most part. My relationship with them has been good. It wasn't until I got tear gassed that I was actually scared of the police.
Tell us some what the circumstances were that you got tear gassed.
This was Wednesday night of last week. I was out there. It was right in front of the Quick Trip. It was a police front line. They had their SWAT gear, riot gear on. The protesters were just, you know, chanting their little chant. Everything was pretty calm. I mean, it was loud, but everything was peaceful. The police asked the protesters to back 25 feet away from the front line. They did so. And then the police asked again, and the protesters continued to do so. That third time, a young man threw a water bottle, and then that's when the police dispersed the tear gas. I just remember running. I thought that, you know, I could smell it. I could definitely smell the tear gas, but I thought I got out of harm's way because I wasn't really seeing the smoke. I was in the neighborhood at the time, cutting through to get to my car. But then that's when, you know, vomiting, choking, crying occurred. It was a scary experience because it was just so chaotic. It was one point when I was running back to the car, somebody who had grabbed my shirt. I didn't know who it was, but they held on to me for a pretty good time and then let go.
And was that the only instance in where you ended up getting gassed?
That was the instance where I got gassed. I have been down there when I seen it dispersed and things, but I was on the opposite end, and I guess the wind was blowing the other way, so I didn't get hit.
And when you talk to the protesters, I mean, are they talking about where is the focus? I mean, is it exclusively on making sure that there is some accountability for Michael Brown's shooting? Is there do you hear conversations about we need to organize, you know, and politically? I mean, what are the different things you're hearing about? What are protesters even contemplating where this goes next week, next month?
A big thing I've been hearing, which trended from, I believe, a church rally I went to on Tuesday, I've been hearing protesters talk about a new civil rights movement. They say that that needs to start right here in St. Louis, and we need to go about, they need to go about it in a peaceful way, pretty much. That's a big trend that I've been hearing with them. They said, you know, because they don't want it to happen again. Others I have heard have a give-up mentality about Michael Brown. They feel like what happened wasn't right, but they also feel like they don't, it's never going to change. And then another instance is just people don't want to talk to me, period, because they feel like I'm the enemy.
I mean, do you get that? Why? Well, I mean, what's behind that?
I think these specific ones who don't want to get photoed are the ones that are out causing the mess at night.
And what of these reports that there are people from the outside that are also, you know, the source of some of the more violent confrontations or aggressive confrontations? I mean, what can you tell us about the makeup of the protesters in terms of whether they're local or not?
I've been hearing that big rumor when I've gone down there, too. They said when the weekend came, it was going to be tons of people from out of town just trying to get a little taste of it. And I feel like that might have just a bit of truth to it, just because it was Thursday night that was calm protesting. When you went on West Florissant, people were riding their cars, honking. It was peaceful. It was loud. But it was calm, and there was no looting, and the protesters there could have easily looted because of how big, large they were in numbers. But then when it came to the weekend and we experienced that looting again, it kind of felt like, hey, there must be some new people around.
And I understand that you recently interviewed a woman who has a newborn and living next to the protest. What can you tell us about that that person's experience?
Well, I haven't talked to her. She had to reschedule with me. I'm going to talk to her today. But from what I get, she said, you know, there's reporters and police in and out all day long in those Kingfield apartments, and she feels like there's no peace. Even though there's peaceful protests outside and things like that, she has a new baby, and it's a reality that's surreal for her.
Right, I can imagine. And I mean, is there, and so it sounds like there's a mix of hope and resignation amongst a lot of the people protesting.
Yes. Yep.
And so give us a sense of it's clear what you know, you're hoping that this fellowship will raise money that will allow you to report full time and get some additional training from the folks at Huffington Post. How are you anticipating covering Ferguson once the national press leaves, once this begins to, or at least these protests begin to, I guess, at the very least, fade from national consciousness?
Well, I'm definitely going to do some legwork. I'm going to be investigating like no other, because I'm going to have to look into public records. I'm going to have to knock on people's doors. I'm going to have to go to city council meetings. It's just going to be a lot of legwork, but I'm willing to do it just because this is a story that needs to be known, because we just had this crazy experience in Ferguson. Media leaves, then what? Is this community going to keep going, keep protesting, keep doing what they need to do to really get their voice heard, like going to vote, taking action, having weekly meetings, monthly meetings, or are they just going to be like, okay, it's over with, cameras are gone, let's pack up? I really am interested to know, not only because I live so close but just to know how this community heals.
And I mean, give us a sense. I mean, it sounds like there's a real vacuum in terms of reporting on those type of issues on the ground in that area.
There is. A lot of reporters, they're just sleeping in the daytime and then going out at night. That's what all of a lot of people that I talked to, they said, all I see is nighttime in Ferguson. Even during the day, all you see is nighttime footage. And I think that's all reporters are really interested in right now, to see, oh, what violence is going to go down, which that is news because, you know, it's horrible. But there needs to be some more investigating. There needs to be some more light shed in other areas.
And my understanding is that you have a like you said, a child of your own. And so what are you doing now? What is your full-time job? I know you're hoping, obviously, to become a full-time journalist. What are you doing now?
Right now I'm at retail. I work at Chesterfield Outlet St. Louis Premium Outlet Mall. It's out in Chesterfield, Missouri, so about 40 minutes away from our home now. It's funny because I go from working on Ferguson, doing an interview with BBC and talking to you, and then I go to Brofit. So it's pretty, it's drastic.
And how old is, do you have a daughter, is my understanding?
Yes, I have a daughter. She's 5 years old, and it is absolutely crazy because I can't remember the exact night, but she did go out there to Quick Trip to take photos. It was about dusk time, and it just so happened she had to use the restroom, so we had to leave. And then I start getting all these calls and texts, and people are like, "Are you okay? I heard about the bricks and glass being thrown." Just so happens it got violent down there, and I left right in the nick of time. Well, anyways, the next morning we're walking to school. And we're walking in my neighborhood, and I'm walking in the street. And she's like, "You sure you want to walk in the street, Mom?" I'm like, "Yeah, what's wrong with walking in the street?" And she's like, "Because Michael Brown got shot in the street." Huh. And that blew my mind because she's only five. She'll be six in September. But I didn't think that she would comprehend that, even, you know, being down there the night before. I didn't think that she could really pick up the situation that was going on.
I mean, do you have a sense that, I mean, what do kids her age, I mean, what do you tell your daughter in this situation? I'm curious as to just at what level at what age the consciousness of the kids get a sense of just what's going on, and particularly the relationship between the citizens there and the police force.
I think it's really hard for parents to even talk about this with their younger kids. Like mine, since she's only five, I didn't know where to begin and where to end. I just let her know that, you know, it's some things going on in our community right now. And I never really talked to her about Michael Brown, just because I feel like she has so much innocence in her, as all these kids do. She's only in kindergarten, and I really don't want to stress such a controversial issue on her. It'll just be kind of robbing her innocence.
Right. And but do you have a sense are kids talking about it at the schools? I mean, I imagine that there's some broader consciousness of what's happening.
Oh, I definitely think kids are talking about it, because when I go to those rallies, and even at nighttime when I go there, there are kids there. I don't think anyone should be bringing their kids at nighttime just because it gets so unpredictable. But there are several kids there. Who knows what schools they're going to? And I believe they're going back, and they're talking about it amongst their schools, because I think that's why Hazelwood superintendent, I think that's why us parents got the call about, hey, our neighboring school district is going through some things, da, 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 da. But
I think these kids do need to be talked to if they're the right age. Parents need to make some point to talk about it, because I think that's what's going on in the St. Louis area. Like I said, I work out at the mall. And since day one of this whole outbreak in Ferguson, you would never know that this was happening in our backyard, because people are just kind of pushing it to the side when you're out in the suburbs and things.
Interesting. And so where can people follow what you're reporting on from Ferguson?
You can go to Huffington Post. And you can also go to beaconreader.com. And then you can follow me on Twitter at Ms. Mariah, which is M with three Z's, Mariah.
Okay, and we have that on the majority.fm site. Mariah, thank you so much for joining us today, and good luck with the crowdsourcing. We have a link to that on the homepage at majority.fm. You know, I think what you're doing is really important, because at one point, the national media, I think, is most interested in sort of the conflict that takes place at night, and ultimately this story is really going to be about what happens during the day, and what if anything good is to come of this, it's gonna be about what's happening during the day as people begin to organize.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, Mariah. All right, we're gonna take a break, folks. Head into the fun half, where we have all sorts of fun things for you. Apparently, Don Lennon, Lemon, still just shocked that the National Guard troops would use the N-word. There's we have audio and video, obviously, people watching on YouTube, of the a Missouri Highway Patrol officer who threatens with an automatic rifle to effing kill unarmed protesters. It's pretty shocking stuff. The officer has been suspended. It's unclear whether or not it was with or without pay. I haven't seen any details on that. Also, sound from a Missouri City Councilman who posted a picture of President Obama as a witch doctor talking about Obamacare. And a video now has been released of the killing of Kajami Powell. You may have seen some news reports on this. In neighboring St. Louis, a man goes into a convenience store, steals a couple of sodas, is confronted by the store owner. He throws the stuff down on the ground. The store owner sees that the guy is acting erratically, follows him out, and then calls the police. Another person apparently reported this as well and indicated to the police that the man had a knife and was walking around in circles talking to himself. The police pull up, and within 16 seconds, the man is dead on the ground, shot multiple times. I don't know if we know how many shots it was, but 5-6 times. And the video has now been released, and it again. They proceed to cuff him when he's dead on the ground. You can't know what the intentions of the police officers were. And perhaps in their minds, they felt threatened, but which is not impossible to imagine. But the nature of the threat was clearly something that properly trained police officers would have been able to deal with that threat in a much better situation. I mean, there is a real problem here. And
they felt threatened because they're trained to feel threatened.
There's something to that. We'll talk about this in the better half. I mean, I can tell you with conversations I had with police officers in the lead up to the RNC in 2004 in the city, and they were being, I don't know if trained is the right word, but they were being primed for an all-out battle.
That they were basically going to deal with terrorists, street fighters.
Not terrorists. Were talking about, yes.
Like,
and
anarchists are going to come, yes, and throw Molotov, yes, cocktails, yes, and deface property.
And, you know, the bottom line is, well, you know, we'll talk about this in a minute, but I mean, we're spending billions of dollars equipping these police departments with up-armored vehicles to withstand landmines. We're spending billions of dollars to equip these police departments with long-range audio devices. If a fraction of this money was spent on providing further training for police officers on how to deal with people who clearly have mental issues, who could represent a threat, but don't at the moment, we would see a lot less of this. In addition, I think, obviously, to the real, also the fundamental problem is that we have police forces. We have an email from a listener that I'm going to read from a former somebody who used to live in St. Louis. I'm not going to give his name, but two stories that he offers from his youth in St. Louis. I think it's indicative of a problem, obviously, that we know is across the country. And there just seems to be a complete absence of leadership anywhere across the political spectrum to deal with this. All right, but we're going to take a break. When we come back, 646-257-3920 is the number. You can IM me at Majority FM. Maybe we'll do a random rush today in the funner half of the program. The dark times, folks. Really just difficult times in this country. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment.